Blog Talk Radio. Today is Monday, March 22nd, 2015, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. I hope the day has been good to you, so happy Monday. I hope it's a great day wherever you are. And if not, you do know that there's still time, right? Time for what? There's still time to make the rest of the day the best of your day. I just love that way of thinking. The day is not over. You can still discover or uncover something to enjoy. I think you probably could if you just take a few minutes to think about it and look around. At least I hope so. You know, I believe that that is an important and if not critical perspective about life in each and every day. It takes some real optimism and positive thinking, but when we can look, you know, past any of our hurdles of the day or even a difficulty or hardship in life and say that the rest of the day will be the best of the day or that the rest of our life will be the best of our life, well, you know what? We have won. We have conquered when we can get to that place and space in our thinking. And my guest today knows something about that. She overcame what could have been a debilitating mental, physical, and emotional obstacle, but instead, she decided to take the bull by the horns, and with determination, she landed in a place of triumph. That's right. She is now turning that triumph into treasure that she shares with other hurting women so that they, too, can boldly tackle what is one of the most painful experiences for a child and help them become healed and whole. Lelaita G has a sensitive and very compelling story to tell, and she's going to share that with us today. She's the founder of Lelaita's Living Room. It's an organization offering women who have experienced child sex abuse a safe place to heal, to be inspired, and reclaim their minds, bodies, and spirits. And on April 1st, the National Black Woman Heal Day launches as her mission continues to bring women together collaboratively to unite and ignite, and I'll say fight. But to bring them together with a sense of new passion for their womanhood and for life. Welcome, Lelaita. I'm so happy to have you as my guest today.
I'm so glad to be here with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, you do have quite a story, and I do want to just go ahead and start there. Our time seems to fly by, so I'm going to just start with the fact that you were a victim of child sex abuse, and we're going to work our way up, of course, to the great and wonderful things that you're doing now. But let's just start there. I know that it's a very sensitive issue, and certainly I would imagine very emotional still for you in some ways. But let's start with your story. Tell us how this all surfaced in your life.
Well, when I was about 2 years old, my mother started dating who later became my stepfather. And he was the only father that I knew, loved him like a daddy's little girl, followed him everywhere. And one afternoon he asked me to come into the room with him and take a nap. And I can't remember if that had happened before. I can't remember at that point, but when I woke up, I realized that something was different. And he had started abusing me. And I remember him that afternoon saying, swear me to secrecy and tell me not to tell anyone. And at the time, I thought the seekers were my friend. And I thought that when he told me that, I was happy to act as if it didn't happen because I wished that it had not. I was about 6 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm. But you remember that something actually occurred at two, or were you just using that as a reference point when this man came into your world?
That was a reference point until when my mom started dating him. I was a little bit mm-hmm. before 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. So then at six, you experienced this, and how long did it continue?
The abuse went on until I was 11 years old, so it continued for 5 years.
Oh, my. And so how would he be able to get you into situations where that he could hide this from your mom and everybody else that would be around? How was that possible? And I'm asking that question for a couple of reasons, of course, so you can explain. But also, one of my my intentions is to help people become aware of how delicate, of course, this is. I'm not trying to make anybody a bad guy. But I think that sometimes we tend to overlook, and we just are parents or people that are, you know, in your everyday world. We're not thinking those things about anybody that could be happening to our child, or particularly anybody that's our mate, somebody we love would do that to a child. So that's why I'm asking, explain how that was possible, and perhaps two things that as a mother, a woman or a father might want to pay more attention to.
I think that's a really good point and question, because I think all too often kids are abused right underneath the noses of their parents. And one of the most important things is watching who has access to our children. And because my stepfather was the only father I had ever known and had been around us so long, my mother let her guards down and gave him a lot of access to me. So I would go places with him all the time, and he would often abuse me in the car. And then he worked second shift. So he would often come and wake me up 11, 12 at night to abuse me while my mom was asleep downstairs in her bedroom. And so I think what's really key is that we have to get beyond the mentality and belief that stranger danger, that our kids are most in danger by some weird guy walking, you know, in the bushes with an overcoat on. Our kids are most in danger by people that they know, love, and trust, whether that be a family member, a coach, or sometimes, unfortunately, a minister. So it's important that we minimize adult access to our children, particularly that one-on-one access to our children.
Now, you say that with a great deal of certainty, and here's what I'd like for you to tell us. You work with a lot of women, and so I know you hear their stories. Statistically, is that what you hear? Is that it's usually someone that has played a up close and personal role in their life?
Oh, absolutely. The studies show that statistically about 90% of the time, it's a person that the child knows, loves, or trusts. So that is what has bared out over time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. As you grew up, little lady, can you tell us, first of all, tell us how the abuse ended, and then there had to be quite a journey toward you're coming to an understanding and a place where you could come to grips with what has happened and beginning your journey to heal.
The abuse ended when I knew I was dying on the inside, and I just couldn't take one more day. It had been going on for so long, and he, time and time again, had promised that he would stop, and he never did. And I can remember one afternoon he had asked me to go for a ride with him in the car, and I knew what that meant. And I just wouldn't go, and my mother asked me, you know, what's wrong? And when she asked me what's wrong, I told her. And so my mom talked about later telling me that, you know, there was something, a look on my face. And my question has been, well, wasn't there a look on my face for the past 5 years? Because children don't go through abuse and don't change some. Now, kids are very resilient, so sometimes seeing the symptoms can be challenging. But my personality totally changed. I became a very shy child. I used to be very outgoing, and I became very shy and to myself and wouldn't want to go out with my friends and play. So that afternoon I told her, and I wish I could say things immediately got better, but they did not.
Oh, goodness. And so it ended there, of course. That's what you're telling us. Or are you saying that your mother ignored what you told her? Can you be clear about that?
My mother did believe me, but in the end, she initially kicked him out the house. A few months later, he had gotten another apartment. My mom sat me down and just said, hey, you know, we can't afford his place and our place, so he's going to have to come back home. So it started another leg of the abuse. I call the first 5 years the direct sexual abuse, and then he lived with us another approximately 8 years until I was about 19, and I call that the indirect sexual abuse years because I always felt like he was watching me. I felt like my mother didn't care. She never checked in on me. Are you doing okay? And there were times after he came back home that he did try to abuse me again. Like I tell people do perverted things. So if we think because we forgive someone or someone says, oh, I'm so sorry, if we think that means that they've changed, we're often sadly mistaken. And so he tried many times to abuse me again. And this is one thing that I tell young people, because sometimes the adults in your life do not do the right thing. So I encourage them to tell and keep on telling until someone does the right thing. And so even though in that scenario, my mother didn't do what was right, when I found my voice, when I told, I protected myself from then forth, and I never let him abuse me again.
Okay. Well, I know that that had to have impacted you going into womanhood, the pain, trying to analyze your mother taking him back. I know there must have been all kinds of issues that you were dealing with. What were the ones that were in your mind that were the most dominant?
The most dominant issue was that I just wasn't worth anything. That the most horrific thing that I could imagine had happened in my life. I told my mother, whom I thought was a loving and caring and protecting mother, and she didn't protect me. As a matter of fact, she put me in harm's way again and again. So in a scenario like that, you feel like, what do I matter? You know, because if this was so bad, if I was so important, then someone would be standing up for me and ending this madness. So I went through such a bout of low self-esteem, depression, suicidal thoughts. You know, just I was so terribly shy, reserved socially, and it was just a really painful time, particularly, you know, during adolescence and as I started going to puberty. It was a very confusing time because as I began to develop as a young lady, I felt like my body was betraying me because the more I developed, I felt like I was at a greater level of risk.
And so how did that impact decisions as you grew into that part of your life as far as your own development, your sexuality, your relationships? How you know, that's a time where, of course, you're piquing your interest in relationships and all of that. Did it affect that?
It absolutely did. And often what you have is people will go to one end of the spectrum to the other, where people become asexual or people become hypersexual. And I swung more to the asexual level and really shied away from relationships because I felt like nobody would want me anyway. And so it worked out well for me. I could ignore relationships, and then I could in turn protect myself from feeling like I was going to be rejected anyway. So it was quite difficult.
Mm-hmm. So at what point were you able to establish a relationship that felt like it was quote-unquote normal?
Now, in all honesty, I haven't done that yet. I got married when I was about 25, and I unfortunately ended up in an emotionally abusive relationship. And what I found in my work is that not all women who have been sexually abused have been, not all women who have been domestically abused have been sexually abused, but the lion's share of women who have been sexually abused do end up in very destructive and abusive relationships. And so my marriage ended, unfortunately, after the conception of two children, because as I began to go on my personal healing journey, I began to realize how unhealthy my marriage was. And it was hard to maintain that once I started changing. You know, I just wrote something on Twitter today. I said, you won't get really tired of someone else's BS until you get tired of your own. Because when you get tired of your own BS, then you don't even have the tolerance to deal with somebody else's. So in my life, I guess I got tired of the BS in my own life and really wanted something. And it wasn't, to be honest with you, it wasn't even that I got to the place where I love myself so much so I was, like, going to step up there for me. But it was really based on my kids. I separated when I was pregnant with my son, and my daughter was a little over a year. And I realized that I couldn't tell my daughter not to be in an abusive relationship if she grew up in a house where I was in one. And I couldn't tell my son to not be an abuser if that's what he saw every day. So I had to make a choice. My kids gave me the strength to make a choice that was both good for them but ultimately healthy for me.
Yes, I was just going to say that. It sounds like you are at a point where you are very, you know, cognizant about making healthy decisions. But at the time when you were going into your relationships, I want to ask this, and again, I probe mainly because I think it's important for introspection, very deep introspection, when you've had such traumatic experience and such pain, because I believe that everybody feels those similar things, and you're overcoming it. You've overcome many of those obstacles, and you're helping other people do it. But did you take anger from what had happened into your relationship, any resentment, any bitterness that maybe you didn't realize, but you were taking it out on your spouse? And I'm asking that just for the revelational aspect of it, not to try to create any blame. That's far from what I'm thinking.
No, that's fine. My life is an open book, quite literally. I did, but all of that anger and bitterness was turned inwardly. And so I struggled with depression quite often. And it actually gave me a higher tolerance for the pain that was coming from my husband. So I had a tendency just to suck it up, because that's what I learned to do as a child. You know, stuff happens, suck it up, keep going, nobody cares. And I brought that same mentality and those same unhealthy patterns into my relationship. Now, quite often, it is the fact that, you know, the anger, the bitterness, the pain, the trauma, we bring into our relationships. But understand that even though I may not have been outwardly putting my anger and bitterness on my ex-husband, the fact that it was going inside on me and I was having low self-esteem and depression, that definitely impacted our relationship as well. And, you know, beyond that, I would say, since you dig it a little bit, I'll just go a little deeper for you. Beyond that, it really impacted our intimacy, you know. So having sex is a very difficult thing, and that, of course, you know men are So, you know, if you don't really want to have sex, you know, it's not usually a happy situation. And so it ended up being a vicious cycle because of his own issues that he brought into the marriage, his anger and his mean ways then really made me more distant and not want to have sex. And then it just became this very vicious cycle of pain and unhealthiness.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you one other question about that. Again, it's kind of for the revelation aspect of it, and then I want to make sure we bring out these great points of the things that you've got coming up. But you just touched on it, the intimacy. And, of course, ideally, intimacy and love should create one of the most healthy environments and situations and everything you could imagine in a relationship. And when I think of what you've been through, and I experienced my own trauma as a child, we know it has nothing to do with love, what happens. And so did you and do you have a greater understanding now of what's supposed to happen in your heart and that intimacy and in that cold exchange at this point? Because I believe anybody can get there. It may not be easy because you learned about sex before you learned about love, that love dynamic. But what would be your description of what I just asked?
Well, I think, yeah, time has taught me a lot, and having time to really look within and understand that if you do not love yourself, you cannot love someone else. You know, I think many times when we're broken, we feel like if someone loves us, if we love someone else, you know, that everything is right in our world. But it isn't, because you can't give love, you can't fully receive love. And that's one of the greatest lessons that I've learned is learning to love myself, learning to release and forgive myself because I felt like I was to blame. I had so much shame on me, and releasing that shame and embracing myself and who I am. I believe when a person is enlightened, when a person loves themselves, when a person can be introspective, then they're able to be intimate, to be vulnerable, and that is the foundation of creating a relationship that will last and that's built upon trust.
Well, I know you're doing a lot right now to help other women come for it with their stories, with their needs, with their pain. And tell us about the creation of Luleta's Living Room, and then tell us about your extraordinary event that's coming up on the 1st.
I'm sorry, could you say it again? I missed the last part of that.
I was saying that you are doing a lot now to help women overcome the similar things that you have been through, and you established Luleta's Living Room, and you have a wonderful event that's coming up on the 1st. So let's talk about that.
Okay, absolutely, and I apologize for that. As you know, I'm in an airport right now, and someone was overhearing me, and they thought I was talking to a friend. It's like, oh, you're giving them great advice. So I got distracted for a minute, kind of ministering to someone who was overhearing. So awareness is already happening. So in my work, both locally and more statewide and national, I found that there's been a huge absence of black women that are working in the field of sexual assault. And for me, that means a couple of things. One, for a black woman who feels like she needs to heal through a cultural context that's not afforded to her. And a lot of studies say that of black women who, if one reports, there's 15 who do not. And even of those who report and those who've been abused, only about 5% seek help. So we need to create as many environments and situations where black women can reach out. And then looking at it from a historical perspective, when we look at the hundreds of years of sexual oppression that we had in the United States as slaves, we did not own our bodies, you know, whether it was the slave master that was raping us or was forcing us to mate with someone else for their profit. We didn't own our bodies. And I believe a lot of that trauma has come forth. And so I decided to establish a work that was called Black Woman Heal. And this year is our inaugural year of doing a specified day that brings attention to this issue, Black Woman Heal Day, on April 1st. And I'm reaching out across the nation to Black women in all states, and so I'm going to do a shout-out because I still need Alaska, Wyoming, and the Dakotas, having trouble finding some sisters in those states, but asking them to do something, whether it is host a gathering, an event. A lot of women are doing some events right in their living room, just intimate gatherings. I'm encouraging people to get together with their friends or with their sisters and do some wellness check-ins. Are you doing okay? You know, talk to their daughters about healthy relationships. I'm having bloggers who are going to be blogging on the day, social media folks, and also people who are going to be praying with us on that day. So I'm just encouraging women to understand that each one of us has the power to do something towards healing our own lives or helping other women heal.
It's so great that you're doing that. And to listen to the statistics, it's kind of heartbreaking to know that there's still so many that you know, deal with the secrecy of it. And I don't know what the case is in your situation, but I know that I have spoken to other women who, you know, they're concerned that the people who have, you know, done these acts are still in their lives in some kind of way, or they're still alive. And they feel that, you know, especially if they're married or whatever the case may be, that there's, you know, the having to deal with the repercussions of all of that. So what do you suggest for the women who really feel like they need to keep it not a secret in the sense of never telling, but need the healing, but need to come forth to talk to somebody? Do you have groups that, you know, maintain that type of level of comfort for that type of situation?
And this is what I will say. I have two things to respond to that. One thing, I just want to tell mothers and grandmothers to stop the madness, because too often when it is discovered that a family member is abusing a child, they too often protect the abuser and not the child. And because it's family, you're expected to sit around and have Thanksgiving dinner, but no one would expect you to have Thanksgiving dinner if some maniac just jumped out the bush and raped you. So we need to stop the madness. Once we know that that abuse is there, we need to, first of all, make sure that our children are protected. It's also important to realize that most pedophiles who have abused children have multiple victims. They estimate that some may have as many as 200 or 300 victims. So if you think that it's out in the open and now he's not going to do it anymore, and pedophilia is something that is debatable by professionals as whether or not a person can actually be cured from it. They can be treated, but it's a very touchy thing. And so disclosure is a very personal thing, because you never know what price a person has to pay when they disclose. From my perspective, I want everybody to tell. I want everybody to open their mouth, because just because you may be grown now doesn't mean that other kids in the family or at the school or at the church are safe. So I wish that everyone would open their mouths and tell, for the sake of relieving their own soul, but for the sake of protecting others. Because often, like I said, you'll have a coach or a camp counselor or a minister that, you know, that are around for years and years.
Melinda, I'm going to have to jump in and help us wrap, because we are really down to seconds. And I just want you to put your number out real fast, and the web address is on my site. So if you could just say real fast how women can get hold of you, and I'll make sure I post that number too.
Wonderful. Women can call me at 608-622-7235, and they can also email me at blackwomanheal@gmail.com. Hello.